Juliet Dogcast Radio. If you like dogs, wherever you are in the world, we're the show for you. Hello, and welcome to episode 294 of Dogcast Radio, which focuses on different aspects of dog welfare. Coming up, we have Ben Parker from Battersea talking about the imports bill.
That's right. It's a really welcome and significant step forwards. The imports bill, it will stop the import of aircrop dogs and other cruel mutilations as well. There's other welcome measures in there as well around helping to tackle puppy and kitten smuggling, and stopping animals under pregnant animals and animals under a certain age being brought into the country.
Before that, we talked to veteran Mitch Hutchcraft, an amazing man. It's only 6 months since he summited the world's highest mountain as part of the longest ever climb of Mount Everest in history. Now he's launching his next epic challenge, a 700-kilometre run from his hometown of Ramsey, the UK's lowest point, to the summit of Ben Nevis, the highest. And you can get involved. Mitch had just arrived in London from Scotland when I spoke to him and was heading out again soon, so I grabbed a few minutes with him. The first question I asked, of course, was for him to tell me about his own dogs.
My dogs are, I've got a 4-year-old golden retriever called Buddy, who I got as a therapy dog from a friend.
Yeah.
But Teddy is the one that inspired it. So it's not about saying, obviously responsible breeding is absolutely fine, but it's to spread the awareness about how amazing rescue dogs are and how overcrowded the rescue centres are and how much they can give, how much love they can give. So, as I say, a bit of background, I'm a big animal lover. I studied zoology and then I joined the Marines, but I've just finished the longest climb on Mount Everest in history, which is why I've been so busy. A 237-day journey.
Wow.
But I've been back 6 months now, and we rescued this 4-year-old Cocker Spaniel only 2 months ago. He was rescued from an Irish puppy farm by many tears and trees. So there's 52 in total. I think 28 Cocker Spaniels from this one farm.
Wow.
And it just inspired my next thing. Because the perpetrator's got like a £1,000 fine, 3-month suspended sentence. And it may, you know, it's just the same story over and over again. Even though I'm still kind of recovering, I'm in a lot of pain still. I want to do something really kind of good for dogs. And I'm from the lowest part of the UK, literally 2 miles from where I went to school. There's a sign which says the lowest part in the UK. So I thought I'm going to do a 700-kilometre, 16 back-to-back run, marathon run from the lowest to the highest point in the UK. And along the way, we're going to partner with many different dog sanctuaries to bring dogs so we can do stories about them dogs and their stories. Each day, we're bringing in a new layer about rescue dogs and how badly they need our help. With many celebrity guests joining along the way. And it's just going to be, hopefully, going to be a great idea for the whole kind of British public to get behind it.
Yeah, absolutely, absolutely. Now, I think it's a wonderful idea, and I think you'll inspire a lot of people. But as human beings, we're generally better at doing things when there's something in it for us, aren't we? So you've already said, you know, responsible breeders, great. But there are greeders, with a G, greeders out there who they're not in it for the good of the dogs, are they? They're in it for the good of themselves and to earn money, aren't they? And to fleece us for money.
Absolutely, exactly that. So obviously there's so many people take advantage of the system and breed dogs for profit, and that's the problem. So it'd be great to bring down the number of kind of dogs that, you know, that are allowed to be bred. And we're still kind of trying to figure out the exact kind of wording for the petition, because we're obviously starting a petition. So I'm in the process now, we're still in the process of just nailing down exactly what we're going to be looking to change. It's either going to be like toughening up and restricting the current laws even further, if that makes sense.
Yes, yeah. Yes, because when you look into it, how do you penalise? How do you, you know, when you report a puppy farm or a suspected puppy farm, as long as they're not actually abusing the dogs, as long as the dogs have food and water, and, you know, it's very, very difficult to get any action, isn't it?
The problem is, most of the time, the local authorities and local councils are normally so underfunded that they kind of slip through the cracks, they slip through the net, and when they do get caught, which is nowhere near as often as they should, the punishment, basically the risk is so worth the reward. The risk is so worth the reward.
Yeah.
We want to make the risk not worth the reward.
Yeah, absolutely, absolutely. And I mean, again, just to motivate people, I mean,
we should be motivated by the plight of the dogs, obviously. But if you, I mean, there is no such thing as a bargain puppy. If a breeder is offering a dog at reduced prices, or even if the prices are fairly, you know, on a par with what you'd expect, but they straight away want to talk money, this should all be red flags. So how can people, you know, what are the signs people should look out for and go, oh, hang on, is this a good breeder or not? What are the warning signs?
The main things with that, say with that, I guess, is obviously if there's not immediate access to, like, you know, to the mother and to the father, and they're not very willing to show the papers straight away, willing to show the papers to prove it, and and basically an unwillingness to kind of give information, or to, if people are starting to, I guess, from experience, if people are starting to kind of be a bit funny, if people are starting to be a bit strange and or avoiding questions and that kind of thing, that's a really big telltale sign. And again, not kind of letting you see the bitch or the dog or the father. Yeah. And that's a big sign. And that's one of the other main problems as well, is the kind of the third party sites, which people are allowed, you know, which people can find dogs on, just aren't regulated at all.
No, it's horrible when you start looking into it and you think, how is this going on? So, I mean, it's wonderful that you are, you know, bringing this to all our, to our attention, and actually doing something so attention catching that will, you know, sort of get this hopefully in the headlines and really shine a light on it. So well done, you.
Yeah, thank you so much. It's just one step at a time, and I know we can't change everything, but even if we can just get, you know, the signatures to tighten up one element of the legislation, then that will be a good win.
Yeah. So you have... You did Everest, didn't you? So what are you off to do now?
So on the 3rd of December, it begins the 3rd of December to the 19th of December, 16 days, 16 back-to-back marathons. We're trying to make this like the Forrest Gump of all dog walks, for as many people to join us along the way with their dogs or just themselves to talk about it. And the more rescue dogs that join us on the route, we can talk about their stories and just basically hopefully inspiring people to adopt, not shop. And the more stories of amazing rescues we can get out there, the more people will be inspired. We've already inspired, I think, about 8 people to rescue dogs just from our one dog, Teddy, made an Instagram page, and he's got 18,000 followers. And we've already had several dogs rescued just because of our story.
Wow. Excellent. I guess the thing is, when people see a rescue dog and sort of think, but this is a normal, if you like, dog. This is a normal, lovely, friendly dog who deserves a loving home every bit as much as the most carefully bred pedigree. They're all deserving of love, aren't they?
Exactly that. And I think a lot of rescue dogs get a bad name. People associate it with, like, troubled dogs or, like, you know, naughty dogs or dogs that are going to be a lot of work. Where 9 out of 10 times, they're just dogs that actually have more love to give. And they're dogs that have been just misunderstood, and they will give back even more love than a dog that hasn't been rescued. And it's just to show people how rewarding it is, you know. And like, my dogs already taught me so much patience, you know, and things like that. And it's just to show that they are equally amazing, if not more amazing.
Yeah. Now, Buddy came part of the way up Everest, didn't he? He joined you at some point on Everest.
So he joined me for the first, like, 2,000 kilometres of the bike ride. After I swam the channel, I then had a 12,000K bike ride. The plan was to pull him the whole way across Europe, but I pulled him from, basically, from Germany. We pulled him from the start of Europe all the way to Budapest in Hungary. So he joined us for the first, like, 5 countries and 2,000 kilometres because he wanted to have him with me for moral support, and he was just my boy. And he was a bit stupid. He's the 30-kilo golden retriever. He went back after Budapest, because straight after Hungary, when I crossed the countries into Eastern Europe, Bulgaria, Serbia, Iraq, Turkey, it was really dangerous. I was chased by hundreds of dogs.
Oh my goodness!
And it would have been. I was bitten. You know, it was chased into trucks, chased into lorries, and it was. You know, it's just that it would have been. I'm so glad that he went home when he did, because I had a great time with him. That added to the challenge, but he would have been in danger if I kept him for any longer.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it sounds like he had the best of the deal there. He got to do the fun bit, and then you had to...
He got to do the safe bit, yeah.
Yes.
The fun bit.
And that's how it should be. My goodness, you really are dedicated, aren't you, to face all those dangers?
Yes, I'm very stubborn. I think it's a mixture of stubbornness and ADHD, really.
That can be a good mix. Well done. And
superpower.
Yeah, absolutely. So Buddy and Teddy will be joining you on this next challenge, won't they?
fairly raw. I mean, Buddy's very fit. He won't be doing everything with me, even though he's capable. He's very capable, but you know, in the public eye, if I was to have a dog do 60 marathons in a row, people would probably say it's not very nice. But he'll be part of, he'll be doing relays. He'll be part of it every single day. Teddy will join for bits of walks as well. But I'll be the only one covering probably the full marathon distance every single day. But they'll both be with me every single day, along with hundreds of other dogs.
Yeah, yeah. That is going to be, I mean, it's going to be a hard, you know, challenge, and it's going to raise a lot of awareness, but it's going to be a lot of fun, isn't it?
Yeah, it's going to be amazing. It's going to be painful, but like you say, it's going to be worth it, which is really, really great. Especially the more people we can get. It's a build up to Christmas, so it's going to be really cold, but a lot of people are going to be, you know, kind of on their phones and looking. So I think it'll be a great time to make it tougher and just add to the challenge.
Yeah, yeah. Hey, who knows? You can pick up some Christmas shopping on the way.
Exactly, yeah. I'm planning to get matching dog jumpers for me and the dogs.
Oh, lovely. Lovely. I love this. This is very British, isn't it? This is a bit mad and very British.
Exactly, yeah. I really hope that the public's going to get behind it. I really think it will once it starts. And it's already got quite a bit of PR, quite a bit of media attention already.
Yeah.
So hopefully it's going to build as the more that we get the story out.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. One thing about dog owners is we love talking about our dogs. So I think the chance to come out and have a bit of fun and meet other dog owners and meet you and raise awareness and money for a great cause, I think that's going to attract a lot of people.
Absolutely, I really hope so, definitely.
Yeah, yeah. So now, where can people find out more about you online, Mitch?
The most important message is just direct people to basically the Instagram, because the route, there'll be a live tracker, there'll be a route map, there'll be updates every single day. So all people have to do is just search Mitch Hutch, so MitchHutch.
Mm-hmm.
Easy, as simple as it sounds, so you just have to search Mitch Hutch, MitchHutch, and for everything on there, the links to where people can donate to the local dog charities for their Christmas wish list, as well as the petition, as well as the daily updates from the route, everything is just by simply searching Mitch Hutch. And Teddy also has his own Instagram, so it's called Mr. Red Ted. Mr. Red Ted.
Yes.
So he will also be on there as well with me. But the most important thing is just to direct people to Mitch Hutch, to that page there. Everything will be on there. And to encourage people to follow, because every single follower, our sponsors are donating a penny towards these dog charities. So the more people, the more money.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, I'll come and join you there, and we'll keep sharing your updates and telling people about this. And I mean, it's amazing. And also, if people want to come down, I'm not super fit. I wouldn't be able to keep up with you at all. But it doesn't matter, does it, people? And if you've got an older dog or a younger dog that you don't want to do miles with, no, people can still get involved, can't they?
Yep, I don't care. I mean, I'm not going to be running the whole thing. But it's going to be as long as I do the distance. So when people join me, I will walk with them for half an hour. That's it. So it doesn't matter if you want to join for a walk, a gentle walk, or a jog. It's for everyone.
Yeah. Brilliant. Mitch, I know you're a busy man, and thank you ever so much for your time, and you told me so many things. If there's one takeaway that you want people, you know, what's the takeaway message here?
To adopt and not shop, basically, and to Christmas and beyond, to spread the word how amazing the rescue dogs are and how much love they've got to give. And yeah, that's the main message.
Yeah, yeah. Well, look, the best of luck to you and to Buddy, and great name, by the way, and Teddy.
Amazing. Thank you so much. Thanks for your help.
He's amazing, isn't he? We have the link to Mitch and Teddy's Instagram accounts at dogcastradio.com, and we wish him lots of luck on this epic challenge in aid of dog welfare.
You're listening to Dogcast Radio on www.dogcastradio.com.
Dogs can smell time, being able to estimate the passage of time by smelling how the intensity of scents changes throughout the day. On Friday the 21st of November, the Animal Welfare (brackets) Import of Dogs, Cats and Ferrets (end brackets) Bill passed its final stage in the House of Lords, which is great news for dog welfare and animal welfare in general. Despite ear docking being banned in the UK for 20 years, a loophole has allowed ear crop dogs to be imported and sold here. Soon, this new bill will put an end to that. Here to tell us more about the bill and the practice of ear cropping is Ben Parker, Public Affairs Manager at Battersea. Hi, Ben.
Hi, thanks so much for having us on.
Thank you for being here. So we're going to talk about the imports bill. Now, we don't often talk politics on Dogcast, but we're going to talk about the imports bill, which was it's going to become law, isn't it? It was passed on Friday. And it's about ear cropping. So first of all, what is ear cropping?
So perhaps as the title would suggest, it's unfortunately a very brutal and unnecessary procedure that involves removing part of a dog's ears to make them look a certain way.
Yeah.
So it's been illegal in the UK since 2006, but current import regulations mean that there's a smokescreen for unscrupulous breeders and owners to continue the practice in the UK, claiming that it took place abroad and that the animal had been brought in like that. Whereas we know in reality that that is perhaps not always the case. So it's done to make dogs look a certain way, to give them a powerful aesthetic, for example, to make them look even more intimidating or more dangerous. But obviously it also causes them significant harm.
Yeah, yeah. And it is horrible. I mean, if you think of films, it's often the Doberman, isn't it? That's the guard dog that, you know, the hero is in the garden. Oh, my goodness, there's guard dogs. Oh, it's two Dobermans, pointed ears, you know, slavering. Not how I would picture a Doberman. But it's that kind of image. As you say, it's that intimidating and, oh, I'm going to get you. I'm a fierce dog. And I feel really it's such a horrible thing to do. It's a horrible process to happen to them, but it's a horrible way to make them appear to the world. If you think of Rottweilers without a tail and then with that glorious tail, they're a different dog, aren't they? They're much more friendly. If you can see the tail wag, it's a different dog.
Yeah, exactly that. And as you rightly mentioned, Dobermans, it's one of the most common breeds that ear cropping happens to. In fact, we had a 6-month-old Doberman brought to our London centre called Milo, who'd unfortunately in his young life been exposed to that procedure. And our vet team was really shocked to discover that cotton thread rather than surgical stitches had been used to sew his ears closed and had never been removed. And that gives you an idea of, I guess, some of the nature of this process. It's not, even if it were acceptable, which it absolutely isn't, this isn't happening in a clean, sterile medical environment. This is happening and being done in a very crude unclean and unsafe way as well. And of course, it's not just about that immediate pain and suffering that the dog is going through, which is of course terrible, but the longer term impact of that as well. Dogs obviously, as you know, use ears for their communication. They use ears to communicate with other dogs, but also, as importantly, to communicate with us. And if they're missing part of their ears, obviously that is impacting their ability to communicate their current feelings or state to us. So the knock-on impacts of that are huge. And of course, there's the longer-term psychological impacts of going through a procedure like that. Who knows, months or even years down the line, if a dog has been subjected to something so cruel, what impact that could have on their behaviour in the longer term too.
Yeah, yeah. And it's horrible. I mean, I had my ears pierced again recently and I said a naughty word as it happened. It really, really, really hurt. And that was just piercing. It's like, I can't imagine the pain that they go through. No anaesthetic, just their ear is cut in some cases. It's just horrible. And as you say, it impacts them way after the physical healing has taken place. It's a horrible thing to do. And again, just for the look, there is no benefit at all to the dog, is there?
That's it. That's the really key point. I think it's that aesthetic driven demand that people want their animals to look a certain way. You'll be so well aware of this, but the role of social media in that is quite significant as well. And we've talked about the Doberman already, but the way that their Dobermans are being increasingly portrayed in even films, animations, is often actually showing them with cropped ears. Mm-hmm. And it just underlines that there's almost an acceptance of dogs looking a certain way that we have to actively challenge and remind people that's not how they should naturally appear. And that obviously if people are ending up with animals that do look like that, they have been through a really cruel and unnecessary mutilation to make them look that way. So I think there's a big role for us as Battersea and for other animal welfare organisations to educate people as to what different breeds should look like. But also it's part of perhaps a wider issue around responsible ownership, responsible acquisition. How can people make sure that when they're looking at getting a pet, Have they thought through the right routes to go through to get that pet and some of the questions they should be asking, which means that we avoid feeding into these trends that are ultimately just doing dogs harm.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. It's all about education and arming yourself with the right information so that you know, you're doing the best you can for the dogs and for yourself. It's you know, we don't want to sort of put money towards people that are exploiting animals, not giving them the best life. Strangely enough, we saw a dog at the weekend that had cropped ears, and we were saying, I was saying, gosh, that must have been brought in because we can't crop here, thank goodness. But now this new import bill, we won't be, well, not we, but anybody won't be able to bring cropped dogs in, will they?
That's right. It's a really welcome and significant step forwards. The imports bill, which, as you say, is so close to passing into law now, it's just awaiting royal assent. It will stop the import of dogs with ear crop dogs and other cruel mutilations as well. There's other welcome measures in there as well around helping to tackle puppy and kitten smuggling and stopping animals under pregnant animals and animals under a certain age being brought into the country, all of which should help address some of those key welfare issues and concerns that we're seeing. So Danny Chambers is a Lib Dem MP and a vet who has helped bring this piece of legislation through the Commons, supported by Lord Trees, another vet in the House of Lords. And I think it's really welcome that it's had political support from across the House, as you'd imagine. These aren't controversial issues. They don't need to be. They are really widely supported by members of the public too. Over 18,000 Battersea supporters across all 650 constituencies of the UK took action earlier this year when the bill was coming back to the House of Commons. And I think that just serves to underline that people really do care about these issues. We want to see the UK as a leading country in terms of positive animal welfare. And this law, I think, really is another step along that line, which is brilliant to see.
Yeah, excellent. It is excellent because, you know, we're famed for being a nation of animal lovers, but you've got to love the welfare situation as well, haven't you? And then that's, as we've said, you need to know, you need to educate yourself, and you need to go and find the facts from people like Battersea. So, you know, would you say to people, Battersea website is a good place to start to learn about these kind of issues?
Yes, if people want to visit battersea.org.uk, you can find out more information, firstly about what this bill will do in a little bit more detail, but also some of the case studies of the animals that we've seen impacted by some of these issues. And I guess most importantly, perhaps as well, where we will take our campaigning work on this next, because the bill passing is a really important first step, but there will be pieces of secondary legislation that the government will have to introduce to enforce some of these measures. And there'll be details that we need to get right with those as well. But I think it's a really welcome step forward. So yeah, if people want to go to battersea.org.uk, you can find plenty of additional information there.
Yeah, yeah. And you mentioned royal assent. I can't imagine King Charles saying no. He's an animal lover. He's got animals. Surely he'll say yes.
Yes, of course. Yeah. So it's completed all of its passage through the House of Commons and the House of Lords and just awaiting that final formal royal sign off, which we're hopeful might happen this side of Christmas. But these things are always slightly up in the air. But yeah, very soon in any case.
Yeah. Yeah. Excellent. Excellent. I mean, I think, again, it's we are humans are visual animals, aren't we? We the look of dogs is often, you know, and I fall for it. I love a short-haired, sporty-looking breed. I love a pointer. But I couldn't, I'm not going to go jogging, so I wouldn't have a pointer. You know, but it's a lot of the damage that we've done to dogs in terms of dog breed and manipulating how dogs look. It is just purely for the look of it, isn't it? It isn't even like choosing a border collie because they run well and look after the sheep. Well, it's just, I like the look of that dog. And we really need to be so careful with that going forward.
We do. And I think social media is brilliant in many, many ways. But of course, the flip of that is that it can drive those problematic trends and people perhaps wanting an animal because it looks a certain way, it fits in with their lifestyle and how they want to portray themselves. And when that is having negative welfare implications for the animals involved, we have to firstly call it out, but also help educate people to spot the signs of, oh, actually, if I want a dog that looks that way, that would mean that it will have either these medical complications potentially later in life, or it's been through something completely cruel and completely unnecessary, like ear cropping. And I cannot be supporting that when I'm looking to acquire a dog. So it's that education piece. And we recognize that people may just not be aware of how mm-hmm. a certain breed should look. So we all need to challenge ourselves to just get up to speed on those sort of things. And hopefully over time, it helps us crack down on those low welfare breeders, importers that are looking to exploit, the latest trend for a quick buck.
Yeah. Yeah. I always think that because it's really easy to come across as sort of, a killjoy, and don't laugh at those videos, don't like that, don't you? But it comes from a place of thinking, but if you knew the suffering, like, teacups is a red flag to me. Teacup breeds, I'm like, no, that's horrific, the suffering for the dogs. And actually, once you know more about the behind the scenes and what is going on behind things, and you can read a little bit about the animal behaviour, it does spoil a lot of the videos for you, because you think, oh my goodness, that baby sitting on the dog, the dog's going, please get off, that's going to escalate. So it is something to be aware of, but it is something we need to be aware of with social media. And I say this a lot in private life, but social media, any technology is only as good as the hands it's in, and the problem isn't social media, the problem is human nature, isn't it? We like to have fun. We don't like to think about serious things. We like some off time, but it is something that we really need to be aware of. And as you say, just have a conversation about it. Just raise that awareness.
Yeah, you make a really good point. I think we rightly, because our dogs and cats provide such great companionship for us and escapism from the real world at times where things are really, really tough elsewhere, we sometimes don't want to think about the serious issues that are part of that world as well. And I think, yeah, that point around social media, people just, I guess, asking the questions when they see content, is that right? What are some of the wider questions I'd need to be considering around that? And I think, our research indicates that people are increasingly wanting an animal to either fit into a powerful aesthetic or a cute aesthetic. And it's really interesting, and it perhaps speaks to the different, personalities amongst us all about what, how we want to portray our animals. But we need to understand and unpick why that's the case. And of course, there's wider issues here around responsible ownership. People that want dogs to look powerful, to look dangerous, to look intimidating, what are their drivers there? That fits much more. There's a huge number of questions and social issues that fall into that as well. So we're, I guess, opening up this conversation, focusing on ear cropping, but our work as Battersea campaigning on this will try and take in as many of those wider factors as well, and really get under the skin of these issues and understand what the drivers are too.
Yeah, brilliant. You've said it all brilliantly, Ben, but is there anything else that you'd like to say?
I think just encouraging people, if they can go along to our website, find out a bit more information about this law, how they can support us, become a campaign supporter. The more people that we can bring on board with it, with the journey of our campaigns, that only helps us take that voice to politicians, make them realise that animal welfare issues are important. They do matter to people. Please visit battersea.org.uk for more information.
Yeah. That's a really important point, actually, that we all have a voice. It's really easy to think, oh, but I'm just me sitting at home on my sofa and I how can I affect things? But you can, and that's one of the things about social media, is it mobilizes us. It allows us to get together and have a collective voice. And if we all, enough of us, put our voices together, they have to listen to us. The politicians have to listen to us, because they're only there courtesy of us, really. So thank you, Ben. It's been really, really interesting. And thank you ever so much. And just tell us the website again.
So it's battersea.org.uk.
Brilliant. And the best of luck with where you're going next with the campaign.
Brilliant. Thank you so much for having me.
We have the links Ben mentioned at dogcastradio.com. And not only is the Battersea website a great place to find out more about the imports bill, there are lots of other resources, and of course, you can support their wonderful welfare work. That's it for this time. So until next time, look after yourselves and your dogs. Thanks for listening to Dogcast Radio, available from www.dogcastradio.com. That's dogcastradio.com. If you'd like to get in touch with us, and wherever you are in the world, we'd love to hear from you. You can do so in a variety of ways. You can contact us on Skype with the ident
Dogcast Radio. That's all one word, Dogcast Radio. By email, you can contact me on julie@dogcastradio.com. When contacting us by email, if you have the facilities, please record your questions or comments and send them to us as an audio file. That way we can include them directly in our programme. We can accept most formats, for example, WAV, MP3. All these methods of contacting us can be found on our website, which is www.dogcastradio.com.
What do you call a snowman's dog? A slush puppy.